This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face to face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com. And of course on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And this week we're talking about colors. Camouflage uniforms of many colors. Who knew? I can honestly tell you that I would be hard pressed to pick out more than three different camouflage uniforms. Like there's the desert one, there's the snow one, and then the green one. But apparently there's a lot more than just that. Every branch has their own, and it's starting a big fight in Congress as Congress now starts to question whether or not we truly need all of these colors. The Army says, come help us design one and we can save a lot of money, but there's a little bit of esprit de corps out there that may be preventing that from happening. We'll dive into that with Tim Homan from Bloomberg News a little bit later. But we'll kick off the program with a rousing discussion of contracts. Yes, kind of a report card of sorts from 2013. What have we done thus far? Contractors make fewer acquisitions and focus on an interesting area. Afzal Bari is here. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
So I kind of alluded just seconds before I said your name. They are focusing on this new area, the cloud. Before we dive into your analysis here, is this what we expected? What we're about to dive into, is this something that people like yourself were saying, yeah, we're right on track. This is what we thought.
Yeah, so it's not totally a surprise there. So there's a lot of interest among contractors in the community. The federal government is actually starting to be more serious about moving to the cloud. So one of the other pieces that I'm working on for the future is looking at cloud market opportunities and also looking back. And you know, one of the findings there, just to preview that, is that when it comes to the cloud, if you think about it, 2, 3, 4 years ago, it was a lot of low-hanging fruit. It was a lot of email systems, or web hosting was very common as far as the first bite of the apple when it comes to moving to the cloud. And now you're looking at much larger procurements out there, much larger RFIs. So with that shift in the marketplace from the acquisition side, there's obviously going to be moves within the contracting community to be able to meet that.
Sure. So your piece is called Technology Mergers and Acquisitions in the First Half of 2013. It's a BGov tracker, and you've kind of alluded to the fact that we're likely down from this time last year. Yep. Why don't you give us kind of your key findings here, a little report card?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that we did was we looked at the top 25 technology services contractors. Mm-hmm. So it's the usual suspects that you'd expect. You know, it's Raytheon, it's SAIC, HP, Lockheed, et cetera. So the top 25 government contractors that deal with technology services. And then we looked at the acquisitions deals that they did within the first half of this year. And this is something that we're going to be tracking on an ongoing basis. So every 6 months, we're going to come out with a scorecard looking across these 25 technology services contractors, and specifically, how much are they buying? What are they buying? What types of technologies are they buying?
Kind of a glimpse into what the future will hold with regard to contracting and where they're thinking, where their heads are at with the future. So 15 announced acquisitions in the first 6 months of 2013 compared with 22 the same time in 2012. That's a significant difference. To what would we attribute something like that?
So there are a couple of things. One is last year there was a lot more activity when it comes to cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. It seems like the players that were buying cybersecurity outfits have done that already. So that's down. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is, as far as corporate balance sheets go, these are all really large, diversified companies. They deal with federal government and non-federal government revenue. So for some of them, they've been buying because their corporate balance sheets have been really strong in the past few years. So it might be a time to take a pause.
Right. An opportunity to bring something up out of the woodwork, or an opportunity to further shore up more teaming partners, so to speak. which one would you say is more likely?
Yeah, so that's one of the other things that we've noticed is within past years, there's been more of a emphasis on looking at buying contracting vehicles, buying into a particular market space. This year, it seems like most of the acquisitions were technology driven. So, So I need to get more expertise when it comes to the cloud. I need to get more expertise when it comes to a particular type of technology. And so I'm going to buy a shop that has that type of expertise. And it's important to keep in mind, so these are large acquirers. They don't always have to disclose when they're buying these smaller players.
Yeah, I see that here.
They only have to disclose it if it's a material to their earnings.
Right.
And for the most case, many of these are not. So it's also partly these acquirers signaling to the marketplace, hey, look at me, I just bought this type of technology, right? So which is still valuable information to know that they actually are making a push into that space.
Read an article, I guess it was a week or so ago, how DISA is now investigating the cloud, this cloud of which we speak. Are we looking at the death of the server farm now? Is this like the beginning of the end, or has it already died and it's taking its last breath at this point?
I would not say that it's the death of the server farm. There is a data center consolidation going on. But at the same time, there are data centers that are still up and running that, that need maintenance, that need continual updating. And even as they consolidate, you're still going to have servers operating and being able to, you know, being able to provide those services across the federal government. So so it might be consolidating, but it's not the death of the server farm. And you know, one other thing I wanted to touch on. So there are actually two acquisitions that are notable, that especially in the cloud.
Sure.
So one in particular is IBM's acquisition of SoftLayer. So that was earlier this year. They bought a 7-year-old technology company based out of Dallas, and it's a prime example of them buying it for the technology itself. So IBM has already said that they're going to almost recenter their cloud offering around this acquisition versus what they had previously.
Sure.
So
SoftLayer being an organization that obviously can provide a lot of value to IBM, the reason for the acquisition, my guess. Accenture has also made a few moves this year. Acuity Group, Fjordnet, and Change Track Research Party Limited, all three of them now ending up under the Accenture umbrella. Anything special about Fjordnet?
No, it's a global design marketing consultancy. So Accenture made a couple of moves in the digital marketing space. Those are likely both for federal customers and also for non-federal. The other kind of notable acquisition, and this wasn't Accenture, but this was Raytheon, who's, you know, derives a huge chunk of their revenue from the federal government. So they derive around 86% of their revenue from the federal government. And they made an acquisition of an analytics company called Visual Analytics. And that's another key space that we've seen a lot of attention towards. It's being able to take lots of data, dirty, messy data from different sources, big data, and being able to make sense of that data and create some insights based off that.
Just looking at the first 6 months, among the top 25 federal technology services contractors and acquisitions since January 1st, the breakdown that you have here, the number of acquisitions by type. Analytics, as you just mentioned, one company, three so far. Non-tech, four. Why non-technical? What's going on in that space, and why is it so important now that that's leading?
So part of that was, again, these are the top 25 technology services contractors. And the amount of revenue that each of them gets from the federal government really ranges. It can go from under 10% up to 99% in some cases. So those non-technical areas are most likely, off the top of my head, from, you know, Verizon and AT&T, they do a ton of work with the federal government, which places them in the top 25.
Sure.
But they're also telecom companies that are buying telecom licenses, buying smaller carriers, things like that.
All right. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're speaking with Afzal Bari. He's a senior technology and telecommunications analyst with Bloomberg Government. His latest piece, Technology M&A in the First Half of 2013. It's a BGov tracker available now on BGov.com. If you could look into the BGov crystal ball, what do you see the second half of 2013? How do you see that playing out?
When it comes to acquisitions, right now there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the M&A space, mm-hmm. Especially with the sequester continuing and with really a lot of uncertainty around the budget in the future, right? So it's kind of a conventional wisdom that we're going to be in a continuing resolution for at the end of this fiscal year.
And what will the spending level be? And I wonder.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it makes it much harder to do those models. And that's another reason why, you know, companies aren't necessarily buying the opportunities, buying spaces on contract vehicles, because there's a lot of uncertainty there. They're buying technology that they know will be in demand eventually.
There's a lot of acquisition going on overseas, a lot of contracts being acquired from companies overseas. How much of this, the mergers and acquisitions here, are we seeing more overseas activity? Are we seeing a lot of that at this point now because of the sequester and the uncertainty of the U.S. dollar?
We are, and part of it also is just from valuation perspective, especially for larger companies, valuations are pretty rich within the U.S.
Sure. All right. That makes sense. His name is Afzal Bari, Senior Technology and Telecommunications Analyst. Next piece about cloud computing. Can't wait to see it. It sounds awesome. The preview alone has already made me salivate. Right, not really, but it made you laugh, and that's all that matters. Technology M&A in the first half of 2013. It's a BGov tracker by Afzal Bari. Look for it on BGov today. Afzal, thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
To learn more about Bloomberg Government, simply call us at 877-498-3587. Bloomberg Government.
Bloomberg Government.
Where business and politics come together. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guest right now is Tim Homan from Bloomberg News. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. So I'm taking a look at the website, you know, Bloomberg.com, and I come across a story that paints a picture in my eyes, and I'm sure it will for the listeners as well. It's called Camouflage Uniforms of Many Colors Questioned in Congress. Now, I know that there are multiple types of uniforms. I've seen them, but I only envision two, like the green one that looks like leaves, and then the one that looks like desert or snow, kind of. So I guess three are the, there's more than that, number one. And number two, there's a huge fight about this in Congress right now. Explain.
That's right. There are now 10 different uniforms.
I had no idea. I'd be hard-pressed to pick out more than three, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's because back in 2002, it was the Marines who sort of started the arms race, if you will, when it comes to uniforms. Mm-hmm. They diverged from the traditional Army camouflage uniform that had been used for decades by all services. And that was, you know, they had a certain type of camouflage uniform for different terrains. But now each branch of the military is branching off on their own and developing and designing what they consider to be camouflage designs that are specific to their needs.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't camouflage intended to camouflage a person in whatever terrain they're on, correct?
That's correct.
Multiple variances of this camouflage is going to do nothing but make you stand out. That's just me. I'm just thinking out of the box here.
Well, the proponents of these, of having different uniforms, want exactly that. They feel like there's an esprit de corps from wearing a uniform for your branch, which is different from others.
Right.
The Marines take great pride in theirs, as do members of the Navy and the Army. And they want to see this these differences continue, because for them, they want, you know, either the enemy or are there other people to look and say, oh, that's a Marine, I don't want to mess with them.
I don't want to mess with a Green Beret either. I don't want to mess with either one of them. But so an esprit de corps kind of thing, a morale issue, so
that's
to
correct.
Speak. These guys are wanting to claim their own territory on a particular color, make their mark. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I mean, I can remember watching TV and seeing military uniforms. There's one solid color, one drab solid color, which, okay, we've evolved from that. But now proposing up to 10 different colors is getting to be a bit much. They want to spend about $300 million on procuring new camouflage uniforms moving forward. At least that's what the General Accounting Office is saying.
That's right. The GAO report really prompted these changes that are being called for in Congress. And they're saying that the cost could be even higher if the Army, which is the biggest military service, if they go ahead with a new proposed design for yet another camouflage design, then it would be billions over the next 5 years in order to procure. Because it's not just the actual material itself, it's not just the clothing, it's the headgear, the footwear.
Right.
And those are what really sort of tack on to the cost.
I didn't even think about all of that. So there are some manufacturers out there who are, you know, drooling at the prospect of potentially getting more money out of the government as a result.
That's correct. Right now, there are about 23 manufacturers of military uniforms across the U.S. And for the ones that I spoke with, they said that this is, you know, these defense contracts are really all that they have left because so much of the commercial clothing manufacturing has gone overseas. So if they can score a military contract, that's a big deal for them, for their business.
Could they then in turn take the older patterns and sell them in the commercial way? You know, you walk into your Forever 21,
I'm sure they could, you know, if they could find some model out there or some celebrity to make it popular, I'm sure that'd be a good route for them.
Just don't wear them in Barbados. You know, did you know you can't wear camouflage if you're not in the military in Barbados?
No.
You'll get arrested.
Wow.
I found that out.
The hard way?
Fortunately, not the hard way, but there's signs everywhere. So if you were in the military yourself, I don't know if you're a veteran. I am not. I did go to military school, but I did not decide to move forward in the military. And I think very highly of those who do. Would you be that passionate about the color of your uniform?
Well, so this is interesting. Since I've written the article, I've spoken with members of the military, and some of them have reached out to me regarding this issue. The higher ranking individuals have a lot more, they seem to have a lot more pride in having distinctive uniforms, where a lot of the enlisted people who reached out to me and who I spoke with don't seem to care as much. You know, for them, it's okay, well, here's something else I have to get my hands on, or here's just a new sort of part of my daily routine and what I'm going to wear to work. But they've said it's not as much of a concern for them.
Standardizing a uniform. You know, I'm thinking back now to when I was in military school, and I've gone back since then and seen the uniforms they're wearing today. I am a little disappointed that they're not wearing the same ones I was wearing back then. So maybe there is a sense of pride, a sense of...
And that's what some members of Congress are saying. The ones who are opposed to having the one joint combat uniform across all services, a lot of them are veterans, and some of them are vets from different branches, and they're saying, you know, they like how there is a difference now. But you also have vets who are pushing for this, and it's mostly Democrats who are calling for this change. It was an amendment to the Defense Authorization Bill that the House Armed Services Committee approved, and at the committee level, it just passed 32-30, which is pretty narrow, and it was on a mostly party-line vote.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guest is Tim Homan, Bloomberg, a reporter who's written camouflage uniforms of many colors questioned in Congress. When they return from the break, what's next for this?
So what's next for this is it's going to be sort of in the Senate's hands. If they go ahead with the Senate Defense Appropriations Bill on the Senate floor, we may see an amendment against this, because right now it's already part of the bill calling, you know, to halt any funding for designs unless it's going to be the new agreed upon design. Mm-hmm. So we could see some floor action in that respect. At some point this year, maybe not in September, but before the end of the calendar year, the Senate's going to take up the Defense Authorization Bill, and you can probably expect...
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yes. obviously, a lot of debate and possibly another amendment on this issue.
You know, the more I think about this, I guess that I am in favor of branches wearing different colors so that I can distinguish who's who. Not that it matters. I mean, everybody is fighting for one common goal and supporting one common cause, but I guess I want to be able to, a sense of esprit de corps. Here's a Marine, here's an Air Force guy, here's somebody from the Navy, Coast Guard, whatever the case may be.
And then something else that the critics of this change have been saying is that it's sort of this is just a drop in the bucket dollar-wise. over the past 10 years, the Pentagon has spent about $10 million designing new uniforms, good. Which, you know, you look at the rest of the Pentagon budget is just, you know, but a fraction.
Yeah.
And even on the procurement level, while it's significant, I mean, you know, the Pentagon obviously does have to procure new uniforms or new batches of uniforms almost annually. So
I wonder how many uniforms each soldier is allotted. Like when they design something like this, do they give you like a week's worth of BDUs or 2 weeks worth? I'm thinking of the Washington Redskins or any franchise out there that redesigns a logo. You know, it's an instant shot in the arm. Are these soldiers then required through payroll deduction or whatever the case may be to purchase more?
So some of them receive sort of special allowances, and it depends on your position. Officers receive a certain amount, enlisted receive a different amount. It also depends on what your job is, because right. certain members of the military have to wear certain uniforms, more uniforms based on where they go. You know, if they're up on Capitol Hill, if they have to be at the White House, they're right. wearing different things than somebody might if they're sort of in a shipyard on a daily basis. But, you know, speaking with members, enlisted members, when I was telling them about how there could be these changes, you know, sort of one of their concerns was, oh, great, something else that I have to, you know,
you
spend money on.
Something
now.
Else you have to buy, an instant shot in the arm to the government
right.
or the contractor or whoever's pocket's going to be padded as a result of the change. Very interesting story, and I look forward to more. Will you keep us up to date on this?
We certainly will. We'll be writing about it next month.
Very good. Tim Homan is his name with Bloomberg News. Tim, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so obviously I was wrong in guessing three camouflage uniforms, but let's see if anybody here at BGov knows the correct number. I pose the question to the staff. The U.S. military wears camouflage. How many different colored uniforms do you believe there are?
Five.
Just the camouflage ones. I think they're down to two.
Five.
Why five?
Well, there's like the traditional green and brown. And I'm just assuming there's got to be four other combos.
I think each has a separate one. So, what do you rattle off? Six? So, I'd say six different.
Six?
Yeah.
Oh, you're close. Would you be surprised if I told you they're 10?
No. I wouldn't. Because they all have their cool, unique uniforms.
111.
111. It's a little high.
You said you were shocked.
I was shocked, yes.
What was it?
It's 10.
Oh, okay. I went way overboard. I just guessed because you said it was higher than you thought.
You mean across the government, so what he wants to do is standardize the uniforms and get down to one camo, which, by the way, is probably not a good idea.
You can't hide.
No. No, but also you want heterogeneity, and you want to be able to experiment and so forth. I understand the impulse behind it, obviously, is probably to reduce costs, so you're only getting one design, standardized.
One really happy contractor.
One very happy contractor, but then you can also play off a lot of contractors against each other. And I understand it's a cost-reducing measure, but in general, heterogeneity is a good idea. But if I had to guess, maybe 20 or 30.
20 or 30, really?
I'm just guessing, but what do I know?
Well, and that's what I went to. I went into it as the, you know, there's the green one that's kind of camouflagey looking, there's the snowy looking one, and there's the icy looking one for snow. So I said three. They're actually 10.
10, okay. So I wasn't off by a factor or two. That's okay. Okay. That isn't bad, but still, I still stick to the proposition. It would be a bad idea, just in the name of cost saving, to go down to one kind of uniform. Plus, once people figure it out, we're stuck with all these people it's wearing the same uniform. Then they got to change the whole thing for everybody. And that costs a whole bunch of money.
Director of Research with Bloomberg Government, Mr. Bob Lighten. Thanks a lot.
10 camouflage uniforms. Who knew?
And with that, we put the wraps on yet another edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott for show updates and random bits of nothingness, of course. Did you know Bloomberg Government has a television program? We do. Sundays at 11:30 on WUSA TV9, immediately following Face the Nation, it's called Capital Gains, and it's hosted by Bloomberg Television's Peter Cook. That's Capital Gains, Sundays at 11:30 on WUSA 9. I'll be back next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.